just a broken handle.
Happy trails to you until we meet again.
This is Phil Nee saying happy trails until we talk again later on WRCO-FM in Richland Center. News This Hour is sponsored by Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service, serving Southwest Wisconsin since 1889. And the Phoenix Center, family fun at its best. There's always something for everyone, including bowling, legendary pizza, and video games.
This is AP News. I'm Rita Foley.
Mother Nature isn't done with us yet. It's 17 degrees in Des Moines, Iowa at the moment, 22 in Atlanta. And in Portland, Oregon, three people died during an ice storm.
Rick Graves of Portland Fire and Rescue in Oregon tells KGW that shortly before noon Wednesday, two adults and a teenager were killed when they got out of their SUV.
The weather brought down a branch, a significant sized branch from a tree over the and it took down a live electrical wire.
Officials say the three appear to have been electrocuted. As much as 1 inch of ice added to the damage caused by a powerful storm that hit over the weekend. And the National Weather Service says freezing rain could return to the region this evening through Friday morning. I'm Donna Warder.
The number of Americans applying for unemployment benefits fell last week to its lowest level in more than a year. U.S. aid to Ukraine, Israel, and other allies is stalled. But President Biden's met with congressional leaders at the White House.
While President Joe Biden's national security team sought to underscore the importance of unlocking Ukraine funding, House Speaker Mike Johnson continues to push the White House and Senate negotiators on immigration measures that go beyond what some say Biden is willing to accept.
We understand that there's concern about the safety, security, sovereignty of Ukraine. But the American people have those same concerns about our own domestic sovereignty and our safety and our security.
Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer said that there was large agreement amongst the attendees that Congress needed to act on both Ukraine and the U.S. border.
I am more optimistic than ever before that we'd come to an agreement. I put the chances a little bit greater than half now. And that's the first time I can say that.
I'm Lisa Dwyer.
Britain's Prince William visited his wife Kate this morning in a London hospital. She's recovering from abdominal surgery. This is AP News. Donald Trump nearly got booted from his defamation trial yesterday in New York.
Former President Donald Trump was threatened with expulsion from his Manhattan civil trial after he repeatedly ignored a warning to keep quiet while columnist E. Jean Carroll testified. Carroll said Trump shattered her reputation after she accused him of sexual abuse in the 1990s. A jury backed her claim. This case involves damages. Trump could be heard saying things to his lawyers like, "It's a witch hunt, and it really is a con job." Judge Lewis Kaplan told the former president to stop being disruptive. Outside court.
This is a person I have no idea, until this happened, obviously, I have no idea who she was, and nor could I care less.
Trump also ripped Kaplan on social media while the judge denied a request that he step aside from the case.
I, frankly, am the one that suffered damages. I should be given money, given damages.
I'm Ed Donahue.
And I'm Rita Foley, AP News.
The old saying, the more things change, the more they stay the same, sure applies to the Phoenix Center. The bowling alley has been the go-to for good times and great food for generations in Richland County. It's where good friends become better friends and good times become awesome memories. From a delicious pizza to bowling to a conversation over your favorite drink. The Phoenix Center in Richland Center is the right choice every time. The Phoenix Center. Just call them at 649-7469.
There will never be a time when we don't encourage pre-planning. This is Mark Jelenic of the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service. Our staff has years of experience getting to know families and incorporating their loved ones' hobbies, activities, interests, and unique requests into meaningful and memorable services. Don't ever hesitate to make a request because you think it might be too out there. We are honored to work with you to create a service that truly reflects and celebrates your loved one's individual life journey at the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service. Service.
Today's forecast calls for a high of 14 degrees. Cloudy tonight, maybe a half inch of snow for our immediate area, maybe more toward the south. Friday, partly cloudy and 13, negative 4 Friday night, and Saturday, 10 degrees. In Richland Center, it is 2 on the positive side now, after a low of 2 degrees below zero. Today's morning show is next.
Keeping your vehicle running at its best is easy with GM certified service from Jones Chevrolet. From oil changes to tires to brakes and multi-point inspections, Jones Chevrolet has the expertise, technology, and convenient hours to take good care of your vehicle. For the very best GM certified service, make an appointment soon by calling 647-3788 or stopping at Jones Chevrolet, Highway 14 East, Richland Center, or visit joneschev.com.
Hi, Travis with Wirtz Floor and Home. Want to improve your sleep quality? Maybe a mattress with a built-in cooling cover is just what you need from American Bedding that is made right here in Wisconsin. Stop down to our newly remodeled showroom and see why we have quickly become Spring Green's largest mattress dealer. With over a dozen mattresses on display, our expert staff will assist you in finding the perfect mattress to give you a quality night's sleep. Located on Highway 14 next to the Ring Brothers.
Welcome to the morning show on WRCO Radio. I'm Phil Nee, and we have special guests in the studio today. We're talking about point in time here in the first part of the morning show. And joining us in the studio, Roxanne Klubertons-Gerber, manager of ADRC of Eagle Country, Richland County, and Michelle Frederick, Southwest CAP Supportive Housing Director, here to talk about a very topical situation here. Roxanne, as we look at it, point in time, we talked about it a year ago, but certainly it's a very important thing for our area, isn't it?
It really is. So this is actually a national event. So every year in July and January, we go out and we're looking for individuals who are experiencing homelessness. We do this count. We get information from them, demographic information. And then what we do with that information is we share that with Southwest CAP, who then compiles all the information from five counties. And that's what the information that they use to be able to get grants and funding to be able to assist individuals in our community that are homeless.
So you do it twice a year. Is the winter one a little bit more difficult?
Winter is definitely more difficult. You know, in the summer, people are out and about. They're able to camp. They're able to have more access and be able to stay warm. In the winter, we really have a hard time finding individuals who are experiencing homelessness just because they're usually hunkered down. They're not camping. They're not out and about. They're really just struggling to find a place to stay warm at night.
So you mentioned it is a nationwide effort. So all communities around the country are doing the same thing on the same night?
A lot of them are.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
It's actually a requirement for our grant fundings that we get from HUD. They require us to do this. Some people choose not to come look for assistance, so that's kind of our primary assistance that we're trying to do is to reach out to people that don't normally come to us on a regular basis.
So you get the word out there for people that are listening. Maybe if they know of someone, should they contact you,
yes.
Michelle?
Yep, most definitely. We can try to get them into a motel and offer them a couple of nights of assistance there so they can get in and get warm, get showered, and try to get a hot meal in them.
I think the key thing for you and the big reason is just to talk about resources that might be available to someone like that, right?
Yes. Once we get them enrolled into our system, the homeless management system that the state requires us to use when we do coordinated entry, we get them in the system. Once they're on our list, we can either help them with a security deposit and a month's worth of rent. If they're really struggling, we can do more, up to 4 months of assistance of rent. Right now, the hardest issue that we're running into is even just trying to find them housing to get back in.
I see. Yeah.
There is such a shortage that it's hard to find housing.
There are a few locations and shelters in the area, though, right?
A few, yeah. Mm-hmm. Not as much as we would like. We rely a lot on the motels to help us. Sometimes we can find other funds that will help us keep them in there longer than a couple of nights. With my funding, because I have to divide it amongst five counties, the most I can usually do is a week, if I have the funding available to do it.
Roxanne, you mentioned that you find some in their cars too, right?
We do. I was just mentioning before we started the show, 2 years ago, I found three different individuals that were staying in their vehicles just to stay warm, you know, and it's heartbreaking. People don't think that that happens in Richland County, but it happens more than any of us realize.
Sure. Some, some you might not even realize are homeless and you see them around the community, right?
Exactly. People tend to blend in very well. They try to. They don't want people to know that they're homeless. You know, they're usually at one of the lowest points in their life, and most people are very proud. And so a lot of times they just don't ask for help. But there are programs out there that can help them, and those are the people, like Michelle said, that we really want to be able to get in touch with and let them know that there could be some resources out there for them.
So how does the point in time work, Roxanne? Do you actually make contact with those individuals and, you know, interview them and ask them questions, or how does it work?
It depends. It depends on the situation. Sometimes we do just what's called an observation. So an individual that appears, they kind of meet all of the criteria for what we think somebody might be homeless. We always first and foremost think about safety of the people that are out canvassing. And then if there is somebody that we can make contact with, then we do. We will stop and we'll talk with them, talk to them about their situation, and then also give them resources. Generally, when we go out, we'll have a food bag with us, so that way if they're needing food, we can provide them with some food, or we can give them, you know, a list of where are the local food pantries, what are the different resources in the area.
Okay. Important stuff there. And as far as the canvassers, do you need volunteers? Are you looking for people to help?
We can always use more volunteers. Richland County, historically, we've been pretty well covered. We have a couple of longstanding volunteers that do our Viola route, and then one that does out by Blue River. And then we have actually an ADRC staff that is assisting. I go out myself as well. So, but we can always use more canvassers for sure, because if we could put more than one person on a different route, then they can split it up and you know, have a little bit more time to be able to really be able to get out there and meet with people.
How difficult is it in a rural area, Michelle, to locate some of these individuals?
Very hard. You have to know kind of the specifics of where to look. Under bridges, in like boat landing parking lots, because they don't think people are going to look for them there. We have been finding a lot in the Walmart parking lots. Sometimes they're at like the fairgrounds, camping in tents. In Iowa County, we find them on the bike trail. So yeah, it varies where they think they can get in and nobody's going to find them, so they don't get in trouble.
And some don't want to be recognized, right?
Exactly.
How do you deal with those situations?
Well, we can offer services,
right?
Whether they choose to, you know, move forward with them, that's up to them. We don't force anybody to come in and do anything. Just because we don't want to step on their boundaries. We want to help them, but if they don't want us to, there's not a lot we can do, which is sad.
This extreme weather, you know, we take a lot for granted, those of us that have a roof over our heads, but this extreme weather, it's just unbelievable to think about somebody being out in the elements.
Yep. So if you see somebody, especially in a car, just because the car's running doesn't mean they're keeping warm. They could be homeless. So if you happen to know them, maybe you could address them and say, hey, is there any chance that we need to help you with a gas card to keep your car going? Or could we offer you more blankets? I know some people do different things like the kits. We've tried to get some made up with hats and scarves and mittens, and we've also put some quilts in. We have a lady that has made some really nice homemade quilts for us to hand out to the homeless people.
So that works well to be able to do that. And I'm guessing you've seen a lot of sad stories.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm guessing this is also something that is also satisfying. You probably see some other happy endings too, don't you?
Yes. We actually found a gentleman last January. It was in Grant County. He was sleeping in his car at the rest area. And if we would have not gotten him in to a motel and then to a hospital, I'm pretty sure he would have lost his legs. He had cellulitis in him, and he was trying to clean them by using gallons of water and then dumping Listerine over them.
Oh, man.
He spent over 3 weeks in the hospital, them trying to get the wounds healed back up for him. So that's just some of the difficulty situations that are out there. They're not getting the health care they need. They're not eating properly. I just had another gentleman that had been homeless for 7 years. Again, some of it was his mental health that was preventing him from filling out and completing applications to get him into housing. I finally just got him in, and because how bad his health was and deteriorated so bad, he actually just passed away.
Oh.
But living 7 years in a car is not feasible for people.
Oh. Can't imagine. And when someone's mental health is involved, and maybe they don't have a family member that is, making the decisions medically and those kind of things, are your hands tied a little bit on what you can do?
They are. Yep. I can reach out to counselors, mental health facilities, but if they're not willing to say, yes, I have mental health issues and go in and get them addressed, there's nothing I can do. I mean, I try to connect them to everybody that we can, that we know that can help. But again, it's their choice. You know, if they're not willing to move forward to say, yes, I need this help, then my hands are tied.
What if there is a child involved? Are things different then if you find a homeless family?
I haven't really came across that. Okay. I've been doing this now in this program for 9 years. And I haven't really come across anybody with children out there. I think more people are apt to let them in. And we have more facilities to address people that are in the family situation versus single individuals. That is our biggest issue, couples and singles, because we have nowhere to get them in besides the motels.
Looking at point in time next week, Roxanne, is there a certain time of the night when you do that or the day?
Yep, so it is in the evening. We start actually late evening. We usually go out between 9 and 10. We start going out and getting ready to go, and then it goes all night, and it actually goes until Friday afternoon, right? Friday at 5.
Well, we
5.
Can count.
Whoops.
Go ahead.
We can count homeless people up until Monday. So we do go out the night of the count. Anytime from 9:30 till 6:30 in the morning is our required time to be out. But if somebody comes in and presents that they're homeless from Wednesday night until Monday, we can count them in the count. Last year, or in July, we actually had 7 people in Richland County that presented homeless after our count.
Okay. Is that about where the number usually is? Or
It varies. Uh-huh. It really does. It depends on a lot, you know, with the rents going up and not being able to find apartments, it's growing. It has grown hugely since I have started this program.
Mm-hmm. Roxanne, how much do you rely on law enforcement to kind of give you maybe some tips and things like that?
So we actually give law enforcement the observation forms as well. So when they are out and about during that time frame, they will also complete questionnaires for us. So they've always been very, very supportive. Pre-COVID, we used to do ride-alongs, but we haven't been doing that since COVID. And it's still been working okay. So law enforcement continues to be a great help.
Are your volunteers out then all night then, that night then? Or
no.
How does it
work? They usually have routes that they do. So once they complete the route, then they're done for the night. So it's usually about a 2.5 hour route is what it generally takes to be able to go and look at all under the bridges and, you know, even bathrooms, you know, here in town, if they're not locked, the public bathrooms that are out and about, we look in there too. So it just depends too. And it depends on the weather. Seems like every winter it ends up snowy or icy, so it takes a little bit longer sometimes in the winter.
You rely on the community a little bit in the public because obviously a lot of people know of someone or, you know, see someone or sees their actions during the week. They can probably help you too, right?
Yeah, you know, we just really want to get awareness out there so people know that they can contact the ADRC, they can contact Southwest CAP as well, especially during that time, so that we can get them counted, you know, to make sure that we know where we're at. You know, when you were talking about numbers, I remember one of the first years that I did this, there were 47 in Richland County.
Wow.
47 that we found that year. Some of them were in shelter, but then also people that we found when we were out on our routes, and that was about 2015. So only having 7, you know, that just tells me people just are not coming forward because it is an ongoing issue.
So you feel it's a higher number than that.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but That, so when you're looking at, that's just seven people that presented homeless after that. But we had two families of three and three singles housed in Parkview on the night of the count. Mm-hmm. We also had, so like Shelter, Lydia's house, does a, you know, they house homeless families. And just to give you an example of what they've done over the last year, they have served 31 individuals, which was eight families, and they housed them for 3,500 nights.
Okay.
Of shelter to that family over the last, the families in Richland County over the last year. So that's huge. Mm-hmm. So looking at all the numbers, are we getting all the information collected? Probably not. But again, like you said, if we can't find them, then we're not able to count them. So the number is probably usually a lot higher. These are just some examples of what we have found or who have come in and presented after the fact of this is, you know, I'm homeless. I want an assistance.
Tell me more about Lydia's house, for those of us that don't know, and how that works and operates.
Lydia's house is the family shelter here in Richland County, Richland Center, and they're able to house up to five families at a time. It's a 60 to a 90-day shelter program, so they're able to stay that long, and then we casework with them to try to find them jobs, try to find them housing. What are their barriers to get them into housing? And that's kind of somewhere where Southwest CAP can also step in too. So if they have evictions on their record, if it's something that we have the funds to do, up to six payments, back payments, we can pay that up and get that eviction satisfied so that it's not preventing them from going back into housing. So hopefully that gives them a step up with the landlord, like, okay, I got this paid up, I got it satisfied, now this landlord might take a chance with me.
I see. So then do you work with landlords and homeowners? Yes, we do. Things like that?
Yep. Right now I just want to put a spiel in. We're trying to find landlords that will do what's called shared housing, especially for our single individuals, because it's hard for them to make the rent payments, utility payments, a car payment, insurance, all of their basic needs on one income. So if we get some landlords that could do shared housing, they rent a room out and they share common areas like your bathroom, kitchen, living room, and make it a reasonable rent. So an example in the Platteville area, because it's a college town, they do a lot of this. So they charge them anywhere from $350 to $450, and that includes everything. Your water, sewer, electric, and even internet. So a single individual can afford to do that and be able to live and live comfortably.
I think that's more common in more populated areas. I just read an article in the Wisconsin State Journal about a Madison shelter that does that with a common living area, but they can all kind of find their own housing. Cheaper rent then.
Yes.
For everybody.
And it's affordable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or our next option is maybe doing tiny homes.
Tiny homes are kind of a fascination as well. They've kind of become in vogue, haven't they?
It is, because then they have their own space. You know, it's comfortable for them, but yet they are in their own territory. You have probably less conflicts going on when you're doing that. Where having shared housing, you're apt to run into more issues with, how do you want to say, disturbances or people not getting along.
Just personalities.
Right, yeah. Everybody just doesn't clash together. But finding the right group that does, you know, that's huge. And I did start with one landlord down here. We need to touch base again to see where she's at. She had to do some remodeling in order to get it going functionally and having at least two bathrooms so that everybody's not trying to share one.
It's a good opportunity, too, for somebody that maybe the kids have moved out. You've got extra space, maybe a basement or whatever. It'd be a good opportunity for somebody to offer that up, too, wouldn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
So do they contact you, or how do they go about maybe getting in the loop?
Either myself or Roxanne. Both of us, we work very close together. We do. Roxanne has been a rock down here for me and very supportive of what Southwest CAP does and everything that I need done to help keep things going down here in Richland County has been huge. So, yeah, reach out to either one of us. They do have our intake forms that people have to fill out in order for us to get them into the system. They have them at the ADRC office or Human Service Building that they can get them out. They fax them up to Southwest CAP, and then we review them and then reach back out to them to get the rest of the data that we need to collect from them.
Point in time. It's next Wednesday. Anything else you'd like to add about it, Roxanne?
I don't think so. I think we've covered everything.
So you have the volunteers in place. But again, if somebody's listening and they may have a tip for you, how should they reach you?
So they can reach me at the ADRC. So that's 608-647-4616. Or they can even just stop in as well to get more information.
Wonderful. We have some other things and topics to tackle here today as well. We'll do that with Roxanne Klubertanz-Gerber and also Michelle Frederick when we come back with more on The Morning Show.
Family Prescription Center. Where your family always comes first.
This is Lynette from the Prescription Center. We want to thank all of our longtime friends who have put their trust in us to manage their family's health. We want to thank our increasing number of new friends who have learned just how special we treat our friends. We do realize you can go anywhere or use mail order. We want you to choose us every day. We know copays are the same for any pharmacy in town. However, we feel we provide a superior value for your dollars. If you find our prices higher, we will match prices for all medications. We check to see if any of your prescriptions have dollar off coupons from the manufacturer. These coupons actually put money back in your pocket. If your current pharmacy does not do this, give us a call. We know your time is valuable. When you call ahead, your prescriptions are ready when you stop. I guarantee you will never wait in our drive-thru. Okay, we do not have a drive-thru. The Family Prescription Center, where you and your family always come first.
Is it too late for me to become physically active? Should I take special precautions? Hi, this is Tracy at Simon's Recreation Complex. More and more older adults are proving that you are never too old to exercise. When starting a program, you should take some precautions. Check with your doctor before beginning an exercise program. Don't try to do too much too fast. Exercise in an intensity appropriate for you. Pick activities that are fun, that suit your needs, and can be done year-round. Wear comfortable clothing and footwear. Take more time to warm up and cool down before and after a workout. Stretch slowly. Simon's Recreation Complex is a participating member of the Silver Sneakers, Silver and Fit, and Renew Active programs, which are leading fitness programs designed specifically for older adults. Silver Sneakers, Silver and Fit, and Renew Active incorporates the above precautions in all of their exercise classes. Call or stop in today with your Medicare supplement insurance card. You may be eligible for a free membership to Simon's Recreation Complex, including all classes. Stop by today and learn why many of our adults refer to Simon's Recreation Complex as their personal fountain of youth. Let Simon's Recreation Complex show you how to increase your energy levels while decreasing the aches and pains of aging. Let Simon's Recreation Complex in Richland Center be your partner in change. Remember, you provide the commitment to fitness, and we have the means to make it happen.
Dunkin' Reward members can look forward to the fresh offers in the new year, including a $2 medium hot or iced coffee, limit one per member per day, triple points when boosted members place an order through the mobile app on Wednesdays, and 100 bonus points for all members who place a mobile app on Mondays. Those who aren't Dunkin' Rewards members can sign up for free on the Dunkin' app or by visiting DunkinRewards.com. Get a free medium beverage with your first purchase, so quick sign up and start earning free Dunkin' today. And remember, Richland Center runs on Dunkin'.
Attention farmers and folks in need of quality supplies. Engine Creek Farm Store has got you covered. Located at 11678 Yuba Drive, Hillsboro, Wisconsin, Engine Creek Farm Store is your local oasis for all things farm and machinery supplies. From essential tools to supplies that keep your farm running smoothly, they've got it all. And guess what? Engine Creek Farm Store goes beyond the farm. You can also pick up some rugged clothes and boots for those hardworking days. Give them a call at 608-528-01.
It's 4 a.m. day, and you're literally sucking baby snot through a tube because she's congested. Man, that's love. And if you love her that much, love her enough to make sure she's buckled in the right car seat. To make sure your child's in the right seat for their age and size, visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Show them you love them. Keep them safe. Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Some people won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is often laced into illicit drugs and used to make fake versions of prescription pills. You can't see it, taste it, or smell it. Suppliers mix fentanyl into their products because it's potent and cheap, and the dealer might not even know. Keep yourself and others safe by knowing the real deal on fentanyl. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back to our community conversation on the morning show from WRCO Radio. Roxanne Kluberton's Gerber is here, Michelle Frederick as well. We're talking about some topics that deal with the area, nutrition programs, and the homeless count, which we just talked about a little bit. But let's talk a little bit about the need for volunteers. I think that's kind of a common theme for a lot of programs, but you really could use more, Roxanne.
It really is, you know, and not only with the homeless point in time count, we need volunteers for that and in all of our five counties that Southwest CAP works with. But we also really need that for our nutrition program and for our transportation program. We rely really heavily on our volunteers to be able to get home delivered meals out to individuals in our community. Right now, we're only able to do hot meals 3 days a week for our home delivered meals because we just don't have the volunteers. So they get hot meals 3 days a week and then frozens 2 days a week. So pre-pandemic, we were 5 days a week. We had 66 volunteers. Through the pandemic, we lost 60 volunteers and ended up with only six. We've rolled that back to about 35 to 40. But really, in order to really get out there and get meals to all the people that need them, we need about 70 volunteers to be able to do that.
I had no idea, Roxanne. I thought 5 days a week was still the rule, but because of the shortage, you've had to back off a little bit then.
Yeah, we've really had to look at our routes. We're maxed out on our routes right now. Without more volunteers, you know, we're also looking at, could there be the possibility that we'd have to have a wait list to be able to get home-delivered meals, which we've never had to do before. So that's something that, you know, we've also been having to talk about because we just don't have the capacity at this point. Our volunteers do a really great job. They're wonderful people. They volunteer, some volunteer once or twice a week, some it's once a month. And we actually just had a situation where we had volunteers stop at somebody's house, and the individual was having a medical emergency. And thankfully, because they were there and they went to deliver that meal, they were able to get that person medical attention right away. So when we think about what we're doing for delivering a meal, we're delivering more than a meal. You know, for some people, this is the only person they're going to see during the week. And our local families rely on that as well because, you know, families are working. And so mom and dad may need a meal and need somebody to check in them because they're not able to do that day. So sometimes we're the only person that sees them.
Yeah, and that's pretty important. And somebody that sees them regularly, they kind of know if maybe they aren't reacting the same or very well that day and things like that, aren't they?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So an important role that people can play, what are the hours that they need to be available for home-delivered meals?
So home-delivered meals start about 9:30, 9:45. It takes about an hour to do a route, so it's not a long, doesn't take a lot of time. Once in a while, you'll see it take about an hour and a half. And again, like I said, if it's... if you want to volunteer once a week or once a month, that's fine. It's really is based on what you're able to do. We do have meals right now. Like I said, we have routes 3 days a week, but we'd like to expand them back to 5 days a week.
Do you need a special vehicle?
Nope, you just use your own personal vehicle. We have all of the equipment that you need to carry the meals, to keep the hot part of the meal hot and the cold part cold. You get trained in what you need to do, and you just go out with your own vehicle. We do offer mileage reimbursement at the state rate for our home-delivered meal drivers. So some drivers take it, some don't. So it really is up to the individual person. Before the pandemic, we had a lot of local businesses that would adopt a route. So that's an option as well for our local businesses that want to give back to their community. You can always reach out to us and you could adopt a route. You know, it could be one route a month or one route a week, whatever you have the bandwidth to do.
That's a great challenge for the business community, isn't it? To maybe get out there and kind of use that as a community service thing for the year.
It really is, you know, and it also helps them connect to our community. You know, our community gives so much to our local businesses, and our local businesses are wonderful in this community. They've always stepped up throughout the years, and so it's a way for them to give back as well.
What if you have a volunteer that maybe, you know, I don't drive or I don't have a vehicle, but do you have an ability to maybe ride along with somebody? Can you do that?
They could do that. The other option we have is that you can also volunteer right at the meal site, so packaging meals. So there's a lot of different types of volunteer opportunities. So even if you don't drive and you want to go to the meal site and be able to help get the meals ready to go out the door, that would be a great help as well.
How about a plug for the meal sites? Can you mention those in Richland County?
Sure. So we have three meal sites. We have the Richland Center meal site that's at the community center. That is Monday through Friday. They eat about 11 o'clock. There's always activities as well with our meal sites. We have our Rockbridge site, which is in the old school there, which is in the Bethlehem, I think it's the Bethlehem Church. And so we have that Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And that one, they serve about the same time, usually if you're there between 10 and 11, because there's usually some activities going on as well. And then we have our Germantown site out in Casanova, which is on Wednesdays only. So, and again, it's about the same time. So
we learned about them last week when we had inclement weather. Unfortunately, once in a while, you have to shut those down, don't you?
We do, and actually we had to twice last week because of the weather. So we always, you know, the most important thing for us is the safety of our volunteers, our staff, and the people that come and participate in the meal sites.
What about on the other side? Somebody that's needing a meal or wanting a home-delivered meal, what are the requirements? Age, and are there income requirements or anything?
Yep, so 60 and older is the requirement. It's an Older Americans Act program. So individuals that are interested in this service can reach out to the EDRC and talk to Tanya Webster, who is our nutrition program coordinator. There are some requirements for individuals that get home-delivered meals. For those home-delivered meals, a person does have to be homebound. And so we do have an assessment that we have to do, which Tanya would go out and do.
Okay. And then it's as far as the cost?
It's donation-based. It so it's donation-based for individuals that are 60 and older. Yeah. So whatever you can contribute, you contribute.
It's a great service. There's no doubt about it. And for a lot of people, it's the best meal they have, or maybe the only meal they have that day.
It is. And what we see a lot of people do is, you know, it's one third of our daily nutrition value, but a lot of our seniors, they break it into two meals. So it's really providing them with their lunch and supper, because as we get older, people tend to not eat quite as much. And what I've been hearing is that they're really enjoying the meals. We had a new vendor start in July, and things are going really well with our new vendor, and people are really enjoying the meals.
What's the favorite meal? Do you know?
No, usually it's a meat and potatoes type of meal, because, of course, we're in Richland County and farming community, so I always hear how much they enjoy those meat and potato meals. But actually, I haven't really received many complaints at all about any of the meals.
So you have the meals, you know, we've talked about. Also, as far as services, ride services and things like that, you have a need for volunteers there, too, don't you, to drive people to appointments?
We do. So we have our Richland County Transportation Program. And so Linda Batten is our transportation secretary. So she'd be who people can reach out to if they're interested in volunteering for that program. That program, we take people to medical appointments. Usually we're going to Madison, Viroqua, Dodgeville, La Crosse, those kinds of trips, or bringing people into Richland County for appointments. We're not able to transport somebody that lives in Richland Center to an appointment in Richland Center because we don't compete with the local taxi. But otherwise, we do all of those longer trips going throughout the county and out to other facilities.
Do people use their own vehicles for those?
Yep,
too?
So they do. Our volunteer drivers use their own vehicles for that. They're reimbursed the federal IRS rate, which right now just went up to 67 cents per mile. And then they do get a partial reimbursement for meals if they're transporting people outside of the county.
I think that's got to be a satisfying thing for a volunteer, isn't it?
It really is. I hear regularly from our volunteers how much they enjoy meeting people and just the sense of accomplishment when they take people. It gives them a really great high sense of worth, I guess, that they're out there, they're helping people get to their appointments. And again, they might be the only person that that individual sees for the week. And so it's another one of those safety net kind of services that we provide. You know, they take people, they wait for them while they're in their appointment, and then they take them back home. So it really is that door-to-door service.
It's got to be a load off the mind of somebody that has an appointment that, you know, we're going to be taken there, you know, you're going to have a ride there and a ride back, and you don't have to worry about driving.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's, you know, the drivers, they really enjoy just hearing about what, you know, individuals, you know, they get a lot of time in the car. And I always say with my kids growing up, if I ever wanted to know anything in the world with my kids, I just needed to be in the car with them because everything comes out. And so our drivers really, they get that real personal time with their passengers, and they really do form really great relationships with the passengers.
I'm guessing a lot of friendships are made.
They are.
Through that, yeah. Michelle Frederick is here as well. Michelle, talking about Southwest CAP and supportive housing that you're a part of. Are there some other things that you wanted to speak about as far as other programs, Michelle?
Yeah, so, you know, Southwest CAP offers a lot of different programs to our five-county service area, of course. We do have the LIFT program that is a transportation program also that is in need of volunteers to get out and about, and they try to cover all five counties with volunteers. The foster grandparent program, which is older people that go into the school to help with kids in extra projects. So the food pantries, they're always in need of volunteers in all five counties. The thrift stores that we have one in Boscobel and one in Dodgeville. I know they're always looking for volunteers. As far as the programs that I run, you know, helping get people back and forth to some places. Right now, sometimes we're relying on officers to give them a ride to where they need to go because we can't find anybody give them, or they don't have transportation. So if there's somebody there that could help get them from the place that they're at to a motel to get them in for the night is, you know, would be huge. That way they get into safety and can get that warmth and the meal. Other programs that I'm running, the rapid rehousing part of it and or prevention. You know, again, they have to meet our guideline criterias and they have to find housing that fits into our fair market rent values, which HUD gives to me to follow.
I see. So what was the second program you said?
Rapid rehousing.
Rapid rehousing.
So we try to rapidly get them back into housing.
Okay.
And then prevention. We're trying to prevent them from becoming homeless to begin with. So that, again, you know, there's a lot of guidelines that do have to be followed. But if they're in a crisis and they've been served a notice that they're going to lose their house, then we can try to get them enlisted in the program and try to get that rent paid back up in order to prevent them from becoming homeless to begin with.
What counties do you serve then?
Grant, Green, Iowa, Lafayette, and Richland County.
Okay, so it's not just a Richland Center, Richland County thing we're talking
nope.
about today.
Southwest CAP covers, that's our territory. So we're looking for volunteers in all five counties, especially for the point in time count. Grant and Iowa, I'm pretty low on volunteers to go out on the night of the count. Yeah, and I mean, just having people involved and being a part of all of our homeless coalition meetings. So there's usually one hosted, right now it's in Richland, Green, Iowa, host one. Lafayette County, we're trying to get back on board to do one locally, and then Grant County. But I also host what is called the Southwest COC Homeless Coalition, and that's a part of the Wisconsin Balance of State requirement. So I host a meeting monthly that's done by Zoom, and I bring all five counties to the table. So we can all put our heads together and vote on policies and procedures that the state or balance of state requires me to follow. It gives other people an opportunity to see what's going on in other communities. Right now, Lafayette County has a lot going on with housing. The Housing Authority director down there that just started there, I want to say 5 months ago, is trying to do huge things for housing. So getting other ideas put into the other communities and counties it's been huge. Like our meetings have grown and people are actually getting involved and discussing, hey, what can we do? And, oh, they're doing this, so let's be a part of that. Or having, when you're writing for grants, the more people that you can show that you're making a partnership with is very helpful in getting us get them so that they're completed in 100% value and they're looked at like, hey, this has got a lot of people involved in it. We're going to give that to them.
Nice to be able to share ideas between the communities, isn't it?
Yes, it has been. Roxanne attends them as much as she can. So, yeah, it's just a lot of different opportunities come up from our conversations that we all have together.
And you mentioned some good ideas. I believe you said Lafayette County. What are some of the things that they're doing that maybe are models for the rest of us?
They're going to look at doing like a revolving loan. So they'll start with one loan, build a house, sell that house, and then when they sell that house, that money goes back into building another house. And they're trying to look at doing that like in a community setting. So all the houses will be kind of built in the same area. They have applied for funds to redo. So the housing authority there has their own apartment complexes that they run. So when they have a Section 8 housing voucher, that can go with one of their apartments. So they're trying to rehab a few of them. One, I think they have to really demolish and restart over because it's the foundation's falling out from underneath it. But she's also looking at trying to apply for some of the ARPA dollars that are out there, and that's rehab, building, and trying to get restructured with housing units.
We were talking about tiny houses earlier, but wouldn't it be great if somebody had that, the wherewithal to put up a whole bunch of those in some area and how beneficial that would be for the community?
Yeah, I would think it would be huge. I think it would be like a good opportunity for some of the clients that we deal with to have some self-worth.
They could have their own little garden there, perhaps, and just that little plot of land. Yeah. Yeah.
We can make it however we want it. You know, and having their input involved, like what would that look like for you? And giving ideas so that we have a starting point would be huge. But finding the pot of land to put that on, you know, is going to be one of our barriers.
Yeah, that's one of the things. Homelessness prevention is the topic that you mentioned earlier. That's one of the things you're focusing on, trying to avoid people from getting to that point, right?
Yes. When we had the Wisconsin Emergency Rental Funds during COVID, that helped a lot of people stay in their houses. But that fund ended in January. It was supposed to go until 2025. That's how fast we burned through that money, trying to keep people housed. Some of it we did have to use for motels, unfortunately, which kind of probably helped burn through it quicker. But with that pot of money being gone, we really don't have other resources to direct people. So if you don't meet my guidelines and my criteria for income that you have, you know, I really struggle where to tell people to go to get assistance. We've been referring to different agencies, but a lot of them have burned through all their money and they're not able to help either.
I presume the hotels give you a little bit of a break on the rates of the night?
They do, as best as they can, you know. And again, it can be challenging for them too, just because we do run into some difficult situations. But I feel that I have built a good relationship with a lot of the motels in the areas. Because I have a no-tolerance policy that if there's something that's wrong and it doesn't, like it's affecting their other guest, they have every right to ask them to leave. No questions asked. They don't have to get a hold of me and discuss it. They just need to say, this isn't working, you need to leave. So trying to keep that relationship with the motels has been huge. Lafayette County, we have no motels that will work with us. Greene County, we're struggling a little bit. We're trying to address that issue. But all the ones here in Richland County have been working with us very well.
Very well, yeah. And I'm guessing you instill that in the person that's going into the room that, hey, you know, mind your P's and Q's.
We have a motel agreement that they have to sign that states, you know, here are the rules. You know, you need to respect this facility and the managers of the motel so that we don't lose our relationship with them. Because if we do, you're just ruining it for other people that need this, that, you know, would respect it.
Point in time coming up next Wednesday. Again, is there a little training for somebody that's a volunteer, Roxanne?
So we do have information for those individuals. If we have somebody new, then we would go ahead and do some training at St. Barnabas Church on Wednesday night at 6:30. There will also be just a very light meal offered at St. Barnabas Church as well. Jay Muller is doing that for us. So, and we have utilized St. Barnabas Church for years. They've been a really great partner in helping us do the point in time count.
So you invite homeless to be there that night as well
for the
special program then.
Yeah.
Okay. Sounds good. The other thing I wanted to ask you about was I noted that radon, it's radon month. Do you have some kits and things like that available for people?
My understanding at Health and Human Services, yes, they do have radon kits that people can come in and get.
So it's a big thing to push here this month especially.
It is.
So good.
It is.
And anything else you'd like to add, Roxanne?
I don't think so.
Okay. We appreciate both of you coming in here today and talking about this timely subject here as well. And hopefully people can take advantage of the programs that you both offer.
Great. Thanks,
Phil. Thanks for having us.
You bet. You're welcome. Roxanne Klubertanz-Gerber joining us here as well as Michelle Frederick on our morning show get-together today.
When it comes to your home's plumbing needs, you can trust and rely on Jelinek Plumbing and Heating. From new water heaters, sump pumps, and garbage disposals, to fixing a leaky faucet or a running toilet, we will solve your issues and provide you with the best options for your home. Jelinek Plumbing and Heating, offering 24/7 service, reasonable rates, and we guarantee the job will be done right. Jelinek Plumbing and Heating, 649-7916.
Community First Bank is your bank for business. Their business bankers have the financial know-how to get you on the path to a bright future. From business checking to loans, online banking to treasury services, CFB's business banking solutions create more convenience, save more money, and protect you from fraud. Get more from your business banking relationship. Visit Community First Bank.
Community First Bank is first for you. CFBank.com. Member FDIC. Equal housing lender.
9 minutes before the hour of 10 o'clock here at WRCO Studios, 5 degrees now. We've made progress this morning. Conversation continues here at WRCO Radio. It is radon month, as we had mentioned. We have more about that coming up. Joanne Krulitz has an update on radon testing month in just a moment on The Morning Show.
Hi, I'm Coach Jamie Johnson, and I've added health coaching to my resume. I would encourage you to listen to the January 2nd Morning Show titled Health and Weight Loss in the New Year and hear my story or reach out to me personally at 608-604-7751. That's Jamie Johnson at 604-7751. Or find me on Facebook. Whether you're looking to jumpstart your weight loss, looking to lose a lot of weight, or get active and gain muscle, our program offers it all across the spectrum. We now even support those who receive the shot for medically supported weight loss. Reach out before January 31st for personal scholarships.
I'm here today with Troy Morris, who is the Environmental Health Coordinator for Grant, Iowa, and Lafayette Counties, to talk about Radon Action Month. And it's pertinent because Troy is also covers for radon, Richland County. Good morning, Troy. And why is it so important to bring attention to radon during January?
Sure. Well, good morning, and thank you again for having me on today. And it's important because radon is the second leading cause of lung cancer, right behind smoking. And the wintertime is when our radon levels are the highest in our homes. You can't see or smell the gas. So the only way to find out if you have high radon levels in your home is to test. And your local health departments have radon test kits that are available at no cost. And this time of year is a great time to test.
Why is it better to test in the winter? I mean, would it work in the summer, or what is the reasons?
Yes, so it would still work in the summer, but the radon levels are the highest in the winter, and our test kits that we have are short-term test kits, so they sit in the home for 2 to 4 days. So we want to know the worst-case scenario is when you want to test for it with those short-term test kits. That is in the wintertime because your house kind of acts like a chimney. The warm air in the winter rises to the ceilings, and that air has to be replaced from somewhere. So it comes from the basement area, and it gets pulled up through any small cracks in the basement floor. That's what brings the radon into our home. That's why the level is higher in the winter.
Now, you said in the basement level. What if I don't have a basement?
Yeah, so if it's maybe built right on slab, so just on a concrete floor, then it would be the first floor. And we'd actually have you test in on the floor, you use more than an hour a day. So if the basement is only for storage, or you may not have a basement, then it would go on the first floor.
Does it matter the age of my home? Like, am I more susceptible to having radon if I have an older home than a newer home?
Yes, it doesn't matter. We find it in old homes and new homes. It all just kind of depends on how the home is built. You know, some older homes are very drafty and the level isn't as high. But some are built with, you know, maybe a dirt basement or a failing concrete floor, and those levels are high. So even if your neighbor may have low radon, it does not mean that your home may not be high. So the only way to know is to test.
Now, if I find that I have a high radon level, is there a way to lower that, or what can I do?
Yes, so there is a way to mitigate that radon level. There's a system that is put into the home. There are professionals that are state certified that can do that for you. In Wisconsin, you do not have to be certified to do the work, but we would definitely recommend that, since they've been through classes to learn how to do it. And it's simply put, they put a PVC pipe kind of through your concrete floor in the basement. It can go up through the house or on the outside of the house and kind of up to the roof line. That's going to act just like a chimney. There's going to be a fan that's placed in that pipe, and then it sucks the radon out from underneath the concrete of your basement into the pipe outside where it doesn't hurt anybody.
Now, are there safe radon levels, or are all levels bad?
Yeah, so the action level in Wisconsin and the United States is anything that's below 4.0 picocuries per liter is considered the safe range. So anything 4.0 and above, we would start to look at. Now, maybe that would say, okay, we need to do a long-term test now. Or maybe it's we need to fix it now. You know, Southwest Wisconsin has the second highest level of radon in the state, and it's because we have a lot of limestone. And that limestone cracks very easily in our ground, leaving wide spaces for radon to travel up through easily to get into our homes.
So basically, radon is a natural gas that exists, and it's just we're trying to keep it out of our home.
Correct.
If I want to do a radon test, how do I go about getting one?
Yes, so you can stop at your local health department, and even if you're from Richland County and you happen to be traveling through Vernon County or Iowa County, it's okay that you can still stop there and get a free radon test kit, and then you do that, and then you put it into the mail, and about 2 weeks later, you'll get the results back from the laboratory, and then if it's high, the health department will contact you.
And if I don't hear from the health department, I can assume it's a safe level?
Yes, so the lab will also send you a copy of your results, so you will see that too. And if you always have questions, you can always feel free to reach out to your local health department. They can explain what those results mean and what they look like.
Now, if it is an unsafe level, then do you have a list of contacts that we can call to help us mitigate our home?
Yes, your local health department has a list of those. And then so does the state radon website, which is www.lowradon.org. That one will get you to the webpage, and it has a list there too.
Now, if we find that our home has a high radon level, we shouldn't feel embarrassed or anything that we keep a terrible home, because it's beyond our control, isn't it?
Correct. Yep. It doesn't matter on what the home is like, brand new, older. That part does not matter. So no, you know, roughly our test kits, about 45% of them come back above 4.0. So close to half is in the same boat if you have a higher radon level.
Well, Troy, is there anything I didn't ask you about that you'd like to share with the listeners today?
No, I think we hit most of the topics. So the main thing there is just have to make sure testing is the only way to know. In Wisconsin, you're not forced to fix it if you do have a high level. Some people are scared if they test that someone's going to come and force them to do that. That's not the case. The average cost to put a system in from one of the certified mitigators is right around $1,200 to $1,300. Now, it's one of the few cancer risks we can negate, so we can find out that it's there and we can get rid of it. So it's something definitely to test for if you have the time and the means to stop at the health department. Or you can order them online, the test kits, or local hardware stores sometimes carry them, but there would be a charge then for those.
Well, I appreciate your time, Troy, and thank you for the information.
The Richland County Historical Society has prepared a 2024 calendar with vintage pictures of one-room schools. Schools of Richland County by Steve Fogle appeared in the Republican Observer during the years 1952-1953. These are pictures of rural schools when he printed the histories of each in the paper, and those histories are available in the Richland County History Room of the Brewer Library.
There are 46 total schools and 4 schools per month, with additional graded schools in the Richland County area included in this collector calendar. Printed by Hoenig Printing with a laminated cover and bound with those collector calendars, they're available from any board of directors of the Richland County Historical Society for just $6 as a donation from the general public. Historical Society members, you can obtain the 2024 calendar for just $4 as a donation. Get yours as soon as possible. Schools of Richland County, a 2024 calendar from the Richland County Historical Society. Look us up on the web, Richland County Historical Society.weebly.com.
Keeping your vehicle running at its best is easy with GM certified service from Jones Chevrolet. From oil changes to tires to brakes and multi-point inspections, Jones Chevrolet has the expertise, technology, and convenient hours to take good care of your vehicle. For the very best GM certified service, make an appointment soon by calling 647-3788 or stopping at Jones Chevrolet, Highway 14 East, Richland Center, or visit joneschev.com.